FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to the amazing Jenny Green. What a way to kick off the weekend. She has us buzzing here in the Cork studio. It's Friday, the 25th of September, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, James Sugu backs himself to surge as Harrington stays positive despite a cruel look.
There was some good stuff at times. Yeah, I'd always take positives from it. My short game was poor, which normally is my strength, so that could be expected from, you know, when you're just not being out playing. I second-guessed myself a few times on a few shots, so that's the sort of thing that goes away with play.
Man of the match, Chris Shields joins Alan Cawley as Dundalk give us another fantastic night of drama in Europe.
And Chris Shields has scored! And Dundalk are through to the playoffs! Chris Shields is Dundalk hero! And he's embraced by Gary Rogers! And there's a scrum of Dundalk players and officials coming onto the pitch to celebrate this. And why not? Because Dundalk are a step closer to the group stages of the Europa League.
The Apprentice beats the Master. Has Cork's Aaron Hill forced Ronnie O'Sullivan into a rethink?
You know, if you look at the younger players coming through, they're not that good, really. I've probably got to lose an arm and a leg to sort of fall outside the top 50, do you know what I mean?
Speechless at the moment. My childhood hero to play him so early on, just to play him. But, like, I didn't just go out there and just be there and just be happy to be there. I still wanted to win the match. I'm just so, so pleased for that victory.
Go on, Aaron, you beauty. Plus, we've Racing 92's Mike Prendergast on a huge Champion Cup semi-final, and we're live to Donegal to see how the new restrictions will impact sport.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now we are going to get straight into the golf because it is day two at the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. It's tight at the top of the leaderboard at Galgorm Castle, and Greg Allen joins us now. Greg.
Yeah, it is tight at the top. First thing to say is the conditions today. Gosh, it's like, it's not winter, but it's real autumn. It's come with a slamming door over the last couple of days. We had a frost delay of an hour and a half. I think that's the first for an Irish Open for me, for sure. But all in all, between the frost delay, the extremely torrential rain at about 11 o'clock this morning, and it was really torrential. The golf course took it very well. It's really had an effect of just stalling the scoring. Overnight, we had three men in the lead, Dean Burmester, Jordan Smith and Aaron Rye, all on 5 under par. Now we've just got Aaron Rye on 5 under par leading. So Galgorm Castle in these conditions has really held up extraordinarily well. So the leaderboard currently reads the Englishman, Aaron Rye, with a round of 70 today, 5 under par, and he leads by one from three men on 4 under. Dean Burmester shot a round of 71. Ewan Ferguson, the Scot, today is 4 under for his round after 17, and that's the round of the day that's in progress. If he actually birdies the 18th, which is a par 5, and it's certainly very birdieable for a player in form like Ewan Ferguson. Around a 65 today, I think, is probably at least a shot better than the 65s of yesterday, such are the conditions. So you've got Ferguson, Ewan Ferguson of Scotland, Dean Burmester of South Africa, both on 4 under par, and another player on 4 under par. Such a familiar name in Irish Opens, Robert Rock. It's not that he's a part-time professional, it's just that he's a coach. He runs a junior school for golf, and he plays on the tour when it suits him. And he's been runner-up to Shane Lowry in 2009 in the Irish Open. Last year in Lahinch, he shot a 60 in Saturday's third round, and had a 30-foot putt on the 18th green in Lahinch last year, which if he held it, it would have been a 59. He just loves the Irish Open, and here he is on a course which isn't a links course, because the two Irish Opens where he's played really well have both been links courses. This is very much a parkland course, and Robert Rock, with a round of 67 today, the 43-year-old North of England man, is in a tie for second place and with a chance of winning the Irish Open, the tournament that he came so close to winning, losing only in a playoff, as I said, to Shane Lowry back in 2009. So they are the trio on 4 under par, Rock, Burmester and Ferguson, one behind Aaron Rye, and also just a moment ago Toby Tree birdied the ninth, so he's moved into that group on 4 under par. So where's the nearest Irishman? You have to go down to 1 under par to find James Sugru, who's tied for 15th place after 9 holes. Bogey's on the 6th and the 9th, so he's holding it together quite well. There are better opportunities in the back 9. The front 9 is a par of 34, the back 9 is a par of 36, so it's a bit more generous. There are 2 par 5s, so James Sugru, if he can shoot around maybe of 72 today and get in under par figures, he will certainly be around for the weekend. weekend and in with a, you know, squeak of possibly winning because he'll only be four shots off the lead. But currently, that's exactly where he is. One under after nine, four off the lead. Then you have to go back to one over par to find Damien McGrain and Jonathan Caldwell. McGrain is one over after eight. Caldwell is one over after seven. McGrain, of course, used to be a European Tour player. He's now a veteran who's a club pro. He plays not on the tour anymore. He doesn't even play very much anymore. He's just a very, very talented player who can come out and mix it with the tour players on a course like this, which is a real grind, and do extraordinarily well, which is what he's doing right now, tied for 27th with Jonathan Caldwell and, among others, of course, on one over par. Mark Power, the amateur championship semi-finalist from just a month ago, shot around a 71, and he has made the cut on five over par. And wouldn't it be great to see two Irish amateurs make the cut, with Sugru in good position on one under, and Mark Power has definitely made it on five over par today with that round of 71. But Patrick Harrington, a really, really difficult scenario. You heard that clip in the intro. He came to the 18th needing a par and a par five to make the cut. He got into trouble left in the rough. Denman was in trouble right in the rough. He ended up pitching to 10 feet and had a 10-footer, if which of you hold it, would have been a cut made for Harrington in his first tournament in 7 months. And the putt did a complete 360-degree horseshoe on the hole. And it looks as though six over par after a 75 will be one shot too many. And I spoke to him afterwards, and anyway, this is what he had to say.
Yeah, you know, everything was going really well. And then I three-putted the 8 from 5 feet. And after that, you know, I got caught by the swirling wind a few times, and I chipped poorly. You know, that normally be my strength, and I just didn't chip very well. And yeah, it's disappointing as well for the putt, the horseshoe, like I did in the last. I've held a few nice ones on the 18th green, so I won't complain about that.
So what's your schedule from here? Because clearly you're now up and running after 7 months, and you know, it's a year to the Ryder Cup. In fact, as we're speaking now, we would have been in the first morning of the Ryder Cup in Wisconsin. So what's from here going to be your playing schedule?
Don't know. I really don't know. I have no idea, looking at it week by week rather than anything else. You know, I obviously have my events to go and play in the States. You know, I might leave that to next year. So I'm very happy to have come here and played. You know, it was nice to get out, but you know, I'm certainly thinking about playing next week, the next two, and that's as far as it getting me, really. I probably will do that.
One thing that was nice today, you're an honorary member of the RNA. It's quite an accolade. Nick Price, Ernie Els, Katrina Matthew and Patrick Harrington named today with that accolade. You've been an ambassador for the RNA in the past. You're a big fan of what they do and how they've progressed in their thinking over the years. It's a big day for you, I suppose, in that respect.
Oh, yeah, no, I am thrilled. It's I've had close association with the RNA for a long time, and I do strongly admire the game of golf, which obviously the RNA represents all around the world. So, you know, the etiquette, the traditions, I think it's a great game, and to be an ambassador was a thrill, and now to be an honorary member of the RNA, yeah, it really, and I'm flattered with the other names, obviously, to be included with them, the other pros. It's a great honor, and something I'm very proud of.
I think they might be flattered to be in your company as well, a three-time major winner, but congratulations on that honor today.
Thank you.
Great. And just to add to that, Duncan, because I haven't mentioned Shane Lowry yet, mm-hmm. He's seven over after 10. He's just bogeyed the par 5 10th. And if he had birdied it, obviously, because a par 5 is the type of hole which these players think of as opportunities, that's a real setback. If he had birdied it and got to 5 over par, that looks like the cut mark. But Shane Lowry now has to cover the last 8 holes, probably in 2 under, to make the cut. And that's a tall order today.
Yeah, so our realistic chance for the Irish, is it with our amateurs, Greg?
Look, you know, it's great to see the power of Irish golf at the moment in amateur level, and I'm not taking a pun there on Mark Power. Mark Power is such a good player. He's the son of Eddie Power and Eileen Rose Power, who used to be Eileen Rose McDade. Eileen Rose McDade, three-time Irish amateur ladies winner, and Eddie Power, his father, three-time Irish amateur men's winner. So he's got, you know, obviously good genes, and Mark is a fabulous player. That semi-final performance in the amateur championship, reflective of a great year in college, which he's had as well over in the States. And so he's a big star, and James Sugru is a big star in the making. It would be great if both of them made the weekend, and you know, had good weeks here. But look, you know, We'd like to see Shane Lowry, you know, in the last five groupings, maybe on the golf course tomorrow in the third round with a chance of winning. But that doesn't look likely now. Making the cut looks like the summit of his ambitions at this point. And let's hope that happens. And maybe he can make a run at the weekend.
Yeah, it would be super. Greg, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Next up, it's rugby because we're heading to Paris to chat to Mike Prendergast. So don't go anywhere.
With Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to the show. We mentioned at the top that Cork teenager Aaron Hill was in third round action in the European Masters. He was looking to build on his win over world champion Ronnie O'Sullivan in the previous round, and he has done just that. He beat Matthew Stevens 5-3 and is now through to the last 16. So great news story to start off the weekend.
Yeah, it's super, super stuff. Fair play to him. And we'll keep on going because there's loads going on this weekend, Marie. It is Champions Cup semi-final weekend, and with no Irish provinces advancing to the knockout stages, there could be a little lack of interest. But when Saracens travel to take on Racing 92 tomorrow at 2 p.m, there'll be three proud Irishmen involved. The ultimate rebel, Simon Zeebo, starts at 15. Nina's Dunica Ryan starts in the engine room. And upstairs in the coaching box, Limerick's Mike Prendergast, who joins us now. Prendy, how are you?
Dunners, good. How are you?
I'm great. Listen, thanks a million for joining us because we know you've a team meeting at 6:30. Obviously, brilliant to have a big game, Prendy, against Saracens, big semi-final, but to have it at home, certainly a massive advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose it's great to get back to the arena. We played here a couple of weeks ago against Montpellier and we had a good win. And we're delighted to get over a tough game against Clermont last week. And we came out, I suppose, of a hard pool, including Munster and Saracens. So we're back meeting each other again. And obviously it's going to be a very hard task, but it's something we're looking forward to. But as you said, being at home is great, obviously. But in terms of the crowds, we only unfortunately allowed 1,000 people. So home advantage previous years mightn't be the same. But look, all the same, it's great to play in the arena.
Mike, that's an evolving story. Is that something that's just you've just found out? Because I know that you were set for more beforehand.
That's right, Marie. We were actually Wednesday. There was up to 5,000 allowed, and the government announced on Wednesday evening that we'd be down to 1,000. So the club have obviously had to adapt and stuff in terms of telling people that they won't be able to come, unfortunately. But look, for us as players and stuff and coaches, staff, it's not going to change a huge amount. You know, we're at home. We're I suppose the good thing is it's an indoor arena and it's a surface that suits us. And we've taken on Saracens there, albeit they weren't at full strength. But a couple of months back in the pool stages, so I suppose it's all set for a good high quality game.
You mentioned those pool stages. So, Mike, it's 1-1 really. You had a good win over them at home and they came out, you know, successful in Allianz Park. But you do mention that you were in, you know, it's quite unique and everyone will look at the big screens and, you know, the laser shows beforehand. But what about the surface for your type of team, especially your backs? It's made for your open rugby.
Yeah, and the thing is, look, I suppose, the thing is you can plan, you know it's going to be a dry ball. As you know, every time you play there, obviously it's the surface, something that does suit us. We like to play that high tempo game, and look, I know every team is talking and trying to play a high tempo game, but it's how you do it. And one thing I suppose we look at our ruck and try and get that ruck speed up, and when you have that allows you to play on the front football. And then obviously when you've guys like Finn Russell and Jeremy Vakatawa and Simon Zeebo and these X-Factor players, you know, it suits their game and it suits the way we want to play as well, you know, so.
Mike, since the defeat to Saracens, the Leinster defeat to Saracens, all the analysis here has been about Leinster and where they're at. But from your point of view, what did you learn from Saracens from that game?
I suppose just how strong they are physically. They came in a clear plan, as they always do. Their fundamentals are very, very strong, and that came to the fore, I think, last week in terms of their set piece, their scrum and their line out, their scrum. I think they won 7 penalties And when you have a kicker like Elliot Daly that can kick from 55 or plus metres, it's a massive weapon. So we know from a discipline point of view, we need to be spot on there. And I think obviously you look at their aerial battle as well, or the aerial battle I should say from last week, and it's another area that they're very strong in, you know, and I'm sure that's what they're going to attack us with on tomorrow. And we got to be ready for it, you know. So but look, it's going to be a huge challenge, and we're massively looking forward to it.
You mentioned the scrum penalties that Saracens won 7 and you won 6 against Claremont. So are we set for a major battle at the scrum?
I'd imagine so, but look, it's two different oppositions we're playing, you know, all different individuals in the front row. They've obviously got world class props, and it's a huge challenge for our lads. But look, our scrum has been something that's been going well, especially this since we came back since the confinement. So it's something that I know the boys will be massively focused on, because it can be a huge advantage, and if they get any bit of upper hand there, or we get penalised, you know, they can hurt you badly, because they obviously can take the 3 points, or they kick to the corners and have a very strong maul as well, you know. So they're a very potent team, they're a very dangerous team, and you know, we got to be ready for that, and also we got to try and impose our game as well, you know, and hopefully if we get the upper hand in the scrum, that will be something that will help us a huge amount.
Is that the main thing, Mike? Because you mentioned the key areas, the kick and battle, set priest, you know, the physicality, not being bullied. And everyone was saying, you know, Leinster can answer that, other teams can. But when it comes to be able to impose your game plan and put that on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, look, it'll come down a big, massive part of it as it comes down to the collisions. I mentioned there about the ruck speed, that's, you know, how quick your ball is. But it actually happens before that. It happens with the ball carrier. And I think one thing that if you look at last week, what it is, Saracens managed to get underneath the ball and hold it up and slow it up. Choke tackle, as it was known in Ireland for many years. You were very strong in it yourself, Donovan, back in the day. So the thing is, that's one thing that, look, we know that's a massive strength for theirs. So they look to get under, and what it does is it just slows that ball up before they actually get to ground. So we need to be very vigilant around our boy carrier. And make sure that we win those collisions, because it's an easy thing to say, just go out and win it, you know. We need to be more physical, but again, it's how you do it, and it's, you know, having good body heights and whatnot, and lacking on at times where you can drive that power through. And as I said, that's what we can, I suppose, implement our game. But we know that, I suppose, from a physical point of view, it's probably going to be the biggest challenge we've come across for a while.
So just go out and win it, Mike. A bit like our texter has sent in here saying, like, Young Munster beating Conn last week.
I knew it would come up.
Thanks for that, Maria. Fair play to you for bringing that up.
They have college this weekend, Freddie. I know you're always interested in the club scene here. So the Energy Community Series kicks off. The Cookies are taking on Young Munsters, taking on UCC. You still keep an eye on?
I do. My brother, Garrod, is actually the head coach there. So I'm obviously in a lot of contact with him. But I'm a massive fan of the AIL. As a player, played in it like yourself, and then coached in it for a couple of years with Young Munsters. And it's a terrific league. I know there's a different format this season. It goes back to Munster starting off, or provinces, I should say, and then international. So it'll be a bit different, but it's going to be a great thing as well. And there's always a high standard, high level of rugby there as well, and great coaches and stuff, so long may it last.
And great to see two of them in your team for tomorrow, Donnacaroy with Shannon, Simon Zeebo with Conn. We've seen Zeebo at 15, and that's a potent back three you have, Prendy, but Donnacaroy in the second row, like, what a servant he's been. But also, out last weekend, are you bringing him in there to tighten up that scrum? You know, if you know they're coming to bully you, no better boy to have.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's just, you know what, it's, and Dunners, you know him as well as well as I do, it's just he's calm, experienced, very influential player, and it's just his rugby intellect as well, you know, and he brings that calmness, that experience. Obviously he's been around the block, especially in this competition, and so has Simon. So he'll bring, as I said, he'll bring that level head that you need in games like this against teams, and just that rugby smarts as well, you know, coming up against who they have in their pack. So, he's going to be a massive cog for us tomorrow, a massive part in it.
Mike, thanks so much for joining us. We know you're rushing into a team meeting. Best of luck tomorrow. Everyone at home will be shouting for you. Give it loads.
Thanks a million, guys. Cheers.
Thanks, Mike.
We're going to take it.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM. Game on football.
Centre back Faith Overlore takes a few short steps up and Gary Rogers saves. Dives to his left hand side. Gary Rogers and Overlore is distraught and Dundalk are jubilant. They lead by 2-1 in the shootout and they have the advantage, Darius.
Yeah, I was going to say when he's stepping up for it, I don't like the look of him. I don't think he's a good game. I think Patrick Holman caused him problems all night, but Gary's watched it and watched his great save from Gary, but keep his height and he's guessed right, so it's advantage Dundalk.
Dundalk can take it with this one. Dundalk from 12 yards can secure a place in the playoff for the Europa League, and it's Chris Shields happy to take the responsibility, and Chris Shields has scored and Dundalk are through to the playoffs. Chris Shields is Dundalk hero and he's embraced by Gary Rogers, and there's a scrum of Dundalk players and officials coming onto the pitch to celebrate this. And why not? Because Dundalk are a step closer to the group stages of the Europa League. Key Klaxic stand in the way this day next week.
Absolutely dramatic commentary there from LMFM to go well with Dundalk's dramatic penalty shootout win against Sheriff in their Europa League qualifier last night. Now, after the game, manager Filippo Giovagnoli revealed that Chris Shields told him, "Can you please effing let me kick a penalty?" Well, he did, the fifth one, as we heard there, and Shields scored it, sealing the win. And now I'm delighted to say that Chris joins us on the line. Chris, that confidence you have, I have to say, I love it.
Yeah, well, I don't know why I wasn't in the force for him. Anyway, I had a chat with Shane Keegan on the side. I assumed I was going to be in it, and I was just making sure I was, because given November's heartbreak as well, we weren't just wanting to be repeating it. So it was a good night all around. Like, I don't even remember saying it to him that way.
Chris, what about the, like, obviously a skipper having that pressure moment though, you know, like knowing it's all on you and stepping up and not only, you know, acting it out but wanting it?
Oh yeah, that's the thing with penalties, you know, you can't really dictate to the players, look, you're going to take this one, you're going to take this one. You have to have 5-6 lads there willing to put their name down and feeling comfortable going up and doing it, you know. And thankfully, you know, it's sadly often forgotten. Like, you see the four penalties before mine were absolutely perfect, and then Gary saved. But because I've taken the last one, I get a bit more credit. But it's probably the five best penalties I've seen. Every one of us were so calm and collective. But it was, when I was standing watching at the halfway line, you're calm and you're thinking, this is great. But then the walk up from the halfway line to the penalty spot, you start to think, jeez, this is on me a bit, actually.
Chris, I was watching it on a Moldovan stream, I think it was. Anyway, the commentary that I was listening to wasn't the LMFM one, because I didn't know that they had it. But I didn't need any commentary to see the reaction from you, though, or to understand the reaction from you, because you made so much noise. And the scenes at the end were just, they were brilliant to see. And I think especially with everything going on, people really enjoyed just seeing the pureness of it.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was one of them sheer joyous reactions, you know. We felt that ourselves, that we seemed more involved in the penalties than their team. There wasn't much noise out of them or when they were scoring. And that's what we felt throughout the night. Sad enough to say, we said at halftime when we got our goal, we said, these lads don't seem like a team, because there's that many boys coming in and out each year. It would be hard to gel. But after all we've been through in the past few months, that sheer elation at the end, I think it was embodied by everybody running onto the pitch, and as the commentator said, it was almost like a ruck or a scrum towards the end. It was just brilliant.
I was jealous of it, honestly. Chris, it looked like a brilliant pylon that we haven't seen in ages. Just
so
being
you'd love
in
a pylon, Donegal.
Brilliant crack.
No social distancing there. Thankfully, Gary took the big brunt of it from me. You know, he's right at the bottom. Strong enough lad took the brunt of it, Harry.
Well, Chris, it must be brilliant, though. You know, like, with the season, the way it's gone, the league, you probably are disappointed, a change in manager. There's plenty of excuses not to go out and underperform or to look for ways out. Not you, you've been brilliant.
Yeah, especially the blip we had, you know, sport as a whole, you know, was just completely stopped for a long period of time. We didn't know when we were coming back, no mind just early, any sport in general, so it was step by step. We were happy to get going in the league, but then more or less disaster struck, and we had an awful run of form that we barely experienced as a group. And unfortunately, it was Vinny lost his job because of it, and that's the thing that we've never faced as a group as well, a manager losing their job. Then you look at who came in. Filippo came in with not much known about him, and was from the outside looking in, was pretty much written off before a ball was kicked. But within the group, it's been a great reaction. You know, Filippo has come in and we've bought into everything he's doing, and there's a great bounce about the group now. You know, we've won every game since he's come in, and like, we've really just bought into what he's doing, and there really is a nice atmosphere around the group. And you know, we needed it, because there was such a turbulent, say, 4 or 5 weeks there that you wouldn't even enjoy your football in the mind. It was such a downbeat couple of weeks.
And just from like a coaching point of view, like, what's he like? Because as you said, we don't know very much about Filippo.
He's Italian anyway. He likes to defend.
Mamma mia, he says, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's very good. He would be defensive minded, you know. He's, would you say, a typical Italian coach? You know, he's a passionate man. He doesn't really want to concede, and he likes to play. Doesn't want to buy any risk defending, but he fills you full of confidence going forward. You know, he's constantly telling ourselves to believe in ourselves. And yesterday's meeting, it was all about, we're going to win, and why shouldn't we be thinking like this? And it was, he said, I've seen it since day one that I've come in. You have embraced me as a coach, and that's all we cared about. We didn't care about the outside noise. So he said before the game, we, himself and Giuseppe, are very proud of us, and they're fully sure we're going to win the game because of what he's seen over the past months. So you're only going to want to play for a man who speaks to you like that.
Well, let's hear from him.
Really, really important night for the team, for the club. I think we did well. I think we could do even better. But you know, the result was so important, and this, you know, that we were nervous about result, and then sometimes we make some decisions not really correct in the build up. But listen, at the end of the day, what is important tonight is go through. They were really good. We react. They were ready. All of them, they were ready to play. And even to the side who was starting was a problem. And I hope to have this problem in the future. We decide at the last moment what was the first 11. But I told them, listen, guys, this is a night where we need everyone. Who's going to go in is going to make the difference, which, to be honest, the substitutions play as they did.
Chris, we had Conan Byrne on yesterday, and he told us a little bit about the team. We didn't know a huge amount about it, but it sounded like it was a real tough place to go. And from watching the match as well, it looked like it was a tough place to go.
Yeah, they're an experienced side in Europe. They're always in and around the latter stages of the qualifying campaign to get into Europe. But the last few seasons, they've fallen short. They invest heavily. They bring in multinationals, and then from what we've seen over there, it can be quite a poor area on the road leading up to the stadium, and then you take a right turn, and there's this 200 million euro or pound complex with two stadiums, an indoor dome pitch, and other training pitches, and a player's apartment right beside it. So it shows the resources they have, but their huge turnover of players is only going to cause some problems. They had 14 in and 14 out, and the majority of that 14, I think, were playing the game. So they can't really expect great results, which they'd probably be expecting given the money they pump in, because you can't gel a new team every year. And we experienced that first time playing against them last night, that they didn't seem as a team. They seemed as a big group of individuals.
Well, they did score, and then you showed great character, really, not to capitulate in any way, because it's hard when you're so far away from home as well in a place like that.
Yeah, especially so early. Have a set piece. We wouldn't have been happy to see it on the set piece. And had that happened maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago against ourselves, we would have thought we could have been in for a long night, but we responded really, really well. And then all of a sudden, we lost Sean Gannon as well, unfortunately, to a big rolled his ankle on the pitch that was digging up. But then that goes back to what Filippo said. John Mountney came on and was absolutely excellent when he came on. He could have been sulking on the side of the pitch that he wasn't starting. But now he's fully focused and came in doing a great job for us.
We always, when we're chatting about European football, it always seems to come back to money. And there's a lot of excitement about the fact that you are 90 minutes away from a €3 million payday, which is absolutely brilliant. But for you, Chris, is it a game that you'll be able to be involved in?
As it stands, I don't think I am, no. I think I'm going to be suspended on Thursday, unfortunately, for some silly decisions and some, say, slightly poor refereeing over the past few games. But that's just how it is. But I'm fully confident in the lads that'll take my place, that we can get the result done. And hopefully on for another, like, you're 90 minutes away from the European group stages again. For a lot of our lads, it would be the second time they've done it, which you probably never would have thought of at the start of your career in League Ireland.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to look at the positives, and that are that you have, coming off the back of this win, that you do have a good solid squad, and that you are at home as well. Well, home in Ireland anyway, in the Aviva Stadium.
Yeah, no, it's like I said there, lads, a lot of our lads have been there 5 or 6 times over the last few years, so at least we have a familiarisation with the pitch and surroundings. We're hoping that might play their advantage. I can't imagine a team from the Faroes have played in many settings like it. And like I said, we've a big enough squad, and we see it every day, the quality we have in the squad. And you know, we take from confidence from last night to take it into next Thursday, and know that it could be a potentially life changing match.
Chris, you have unbelievable confidence in your squad, but what about when players step up, a bit like yourself, to score it? But Gary Rogers, 39 years of age and still producing the goods, he's a freak.
I know, Benjamin Button, he gets fitter every year. You know, he looks after himself incredibly well. He'll downplay any talk of being old or even looking towards retirement. I know that for a fact. Well, yeah, he's a credit to himself. I'm pretty sure he's probably the record European appearance holder within the league, and he just showed that experience last night with a vital save in the shootout.
He's going to need to be doing a lot of recovery, though, because, Chris, you have a huge amount of games coming up over the next few weeks and even a couple of months.
Yeah, I've seen the article, should we get through, and the pile on the matches is going to be absolutely phenomenal. But this is where the big squad that we have at the minute could come into play, and players that might have found themselves out of favour and not getting much game time are all of a sudden playing at least a game a week, if not 1.5, 2 games a week. So we're going to really need, say, the squad of 23, 24 to dig in for each other from, well, we're hoping we're in the group stage from now until December when that ends. So, you know, you could find your fortune changing drastically.
Well, Chris, you certainly gave everybody a lift last night, I have to say. I think everybody enjoyed being able to see you go through, and we're all really looking forward to Thursday, and it's just brilliant to have something as big as that game to look forward to. So best of luck with that and over the next few months as well.
Absolutely, thanks very much.
Thanks a million. Now we are also joined by Alan Cawley, and Alan, I'd say you enjoyed last night.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant, Marie, and listening to the interview there with Chris. I know him very well, and he's a great lad, and for him to pop up and score the winning penalty as well was the icing on the cake. But you're right, he's right about all the other lads who took the penalties, Patrick McElhenney, and even the manager in his interview talking about the impact the substitutes had. I felt McElhenney and Daniel Kelly added a whole new impetus for them as well, and it would have been a travesty had the knock on Trumery, despite the resources that Tiraspol have, and obviously the European history as well, because as Chris says, they're always towards the latter end of the qualifying and sometimes in the group stages. But I felt Dundalk were a better team overall. They were constantly fouling them and trying to stifle them and just upset any rhythm that Dundalk were getting into. So they were the better team overall. Sometimes when it goes to penalties, as we know, you can be unfortunate, but they stood up and took great penalties, and I'm delighted to see them go through. And to be one game away from the group stages again, Marie, it's absolutely phenomenal, especially considering the upheaval and all the stuff that was going on for the last 4 or 5 weeks in the dock as well. So credit to the players.
Alan, just on the manager, you're dead right, credit to the players. But to have that mentality, to nearly have them to be confident within themselves. Sometimes as Irish, we play each other down, we like to be the underdog. It seems like he's come in and told them, you know, start thinking about being great.
Absolutely, but to be fair, Dunica, as well, that dressing room is very experienced, and it's been player driven for a long time. Like, that's the one thing we used to always applaud them on over the years, even when Stephen Kenny was the manager, that it was very much player driven, and they set the standards for themselves, and that's been the case over the last number of years. And so I suppose the major plus for the new manager when he came in, sometimes when you take over a team, it's because they're after losing a load of games, or they're bottom of the table, or they're facing relegation. When he came in, they had only lost two or three games. It was just a blip. And he had all the players still there, the whole squad that was assembled, and the whole squad that's been there for the last number of years and doing really well. So that was a major plus point from the manager's point of view. Obviously, there was a little kind of the unknown factor from the outside, as Chris says, there was a little bit of noise from the outside of people probably writing off the manager before he even got going, which he had to deal with himself. But he's dealt with it very well. He's kept his head down. The interview that he made at the very start, I felt he came across very likeable, and people wanted to, I suppose, get on board with him straight away. Chris spoke about how praiseworthy he was towards the players in the dressing room there, the belief that he's given them, and they all seem to be happy and want to play for him. So that's all you want as a manager. Once you've the group on side and you've them wanting to play for you, that's half the battle.
He's another big test on Sunday against Shamrock Rovers, Alan.
Yeah, a big test, but as Chris says, the games are coming thick and fast, Marie, and that's par for the course when you're successful. It'll be interesting to see the lineup that he names, because obviously you would have to look at the league table and think that the league has gone for Dundalk, as we know, and Shamrock Rovers are riding high, very strong team, and we saw the performance they put in against AC Milan last week. So it'll be interesting to see the lineup, because Thursday is a much more important game for them now, especially after them travelling back from Moldova last night. They played 120 minutes as well, so he looked to, I'd say, rest a few of the key fellas. And as Chris also mentioned, there is a big enough squad to do that in Dundalk and still acquit themselves very well. So I'd say they've all eyes now on the game on Thursday. They'll still obviously turn up and put in a decent performance against Shamrock Rovers, but I'm sure they're not too concerned now how that goes.
And there's a huge game in the Women's National League as well, with Shelburne and Piemont facing off. And there's just a point separating these two teams at the top of the table as well, adding an extra edge.
Yeah, Shells are obviously unbeaten, rate of 1-5, drawn 1, sitting on 16 points, and Piemont, unfortunately, they lost to Wexford Utes. And I wouldn't rule Wexford Utes out in the race either. Obviously, they have a game in hand. If they were to win that game in hand, they'd be level with Piemont. So it looks like it's going to be a tight tussle at the top, as it always is with these. Huge game tonight, top of the table clash, as you say. And these are the games that are going to define the season, because you look at those teams, as I said, one is unbeaten and one has only lost one game. They'll beat all the other teams below them in the table, but it's the games that they face off in the head-to-heads that will decide the league title.
Now, speaking of big games, it actually feels like Manchester United's game against Brighton is a must-win game for Manchester United, and the season has only started.
Yeah, it's crazy to think that, Marie, but that's the case, because you look at the performance that they put in. They've heaped a load of pressure on themselves, because the performance they put in against Crystal Palace just wasn't acceptable and nowhere near the level of Man United. And we spoke a few weeks ago, I suppose, in the build-up to the Premier League, and thinking, I never thought for a second that Man United would be anywhere near the top, and I had said that. So it didn't surprise me, to be honest with you, but I thought they would have strengthened. And you look at the other teams, and we spoke about the recruitment of the other teams and the players and the quality that they've brought in, and Man United just haven't been at that level at all. They brought in Van de Beek, who looks like a good signing, but they still need another two or three, four players even to be anywhere near the level of what we watched with Liverpool on Sunday against Chelsea. I thought Liverpool were absolutely outstanding. And then, of course, they brought in the acquisition of Thiago and Jota as well on top of that. Also, you look at Man City on Monday night, first half, they were very, very good, despite missing a whole load of players as well. So it'll be them two again. I spoke to you as well, and I mentioned Chelsea being dark horses.
Marie. You did.
That was before Thiago and Jota signed for Liverpool, so I go back to Liverpool to win it now.
To be fair to
Chelsea, when Lampard gets all the signings and the players out, I think they'll be a lot stronger. He hasn't been able to do
and
that
yet. And sorts out his goalie as well.
Yeah, and sorts out the goalkeeping situation. So there's still question marks there, but when he gets all them on the pitch, I still think they'll have a lot to say, but there's still a bit of a gap with Liverpool and Man City from what we watched last Sunday.
So Chelsea are taking on West Brom. Just one thing about United, you mentioned the kind of recruitment. Can they do something to sort out their defence? We're seeing teams score goals for fun, but without recruiting, can you do anything there? Can Ollie do anything to sort out their poor D?
Well, you'd like to think Donegan are doing plenty on the coaching pitch, but it certainly doesn't look like that when they go out on the pitch on the Saturday. And the amount of individual mistakes and errors, and it's not the first time as well. You look at Lindelof last week for the goal, how weak he was in the tackle with Zaha before Zaha scored. And they're just not good enough. That's the simple answer, to be honest with you. Everybody talks about Harry Maguire and maybe a partner for him. I'd even question whether he's good enough in the money that they play, Donica. Especially, as I say, if you're trying to compete with the likes of Liverpool, and obviously we watched Bayern Munich last night, that's the level that you're trying to reach. And unfortunately for Man United at the moment, they're nowhere near that level with the players that they have in the team.
Now we are going to leave our football chat here, Alan, and move to snooker, because there is a great story that we mentioned a little bit earlier. Aaron Hill, he's got his round of 16 game against Yang Bingtao starting at 7 p.m. And what a story.
Oh, it's unbelievable, Marie. Yeah, I had Dundalk on the streaming service and I had Aaron Hill on the television last night. So top quality entertainment. And to see, obviously, Dundalk come through and then the story of the night being topped off with Aaron Hill beating Ronnie O'Sullivan in a brilliant match. I watched the whole match. He started off excellently, went 2-0 up. Then O'Sullivan came back and it was tit for tat really up until they went 4-4 and it went down to a decider. But I suppose the composure that he showed and the maturity for one so young and 18 against the world champion, against the greatest player that's ever played the game, it was just phenomenal. And I heard a little bit about this lad before the tournament and that he was certainly one to watch out for. Well, he's after putting himself certainly on the map now after the performance. And then to top it off, sometimes when you play then in the next round, it can be a little bit after the Lord Mayor show, Marie, but he went down again and showed huge maturity and beat Matthew Stevens today. So it sets it up lovely for him tonight. Yang Bingtao is a very good player as well. So, but to be at that level in his first professional tournament is phenomenal. But to beat O'Sullivan was just unbelievable.
I was reading about him a little bit earlier, and by all accounts, he's one of these people who's good at absolutely everything. Good soccer player, good Gaelic footballer, good hurler. He wasn't picked to play on some sort of a Cork football team. Was really disappointed. His dad said, "Let's go off and have a game of snooker." He picked up the cue and was just unbelievable from the off. And like, that was only a few years ago. I think he was 14 when he first started playing. And like, according to all the reports today, from when that first time he started playing, everyone was like, he has something special. So he sounds like he's one of those people that's good at everything.
Typical Cork.
Well, I was just going to say, Donica, the Cork City football team could do with him at the moment. The Cork Gaelic team could do with him at the moment.
His dad, Stephen, was speaking on Claire Byrne today and gave a little bit of insight into him. Let's hear it now.
And he's only a baby. And he started playing when he was 14.
I brought him down when he was 14 years of age because he was an excellent soccer player. And he had trialled for Cork and he got down to the last few and he wasn't picked. And he was devastated over it. And I said, look, come on, we go down for the game of snooker. And so, look, the rest is history now.
Fish to water.
Yeah, exactly. It's just unbelievable. And you can't teach that. It's just a gift. It's just a gift. Most of the shots Aaron was taking there towards the end, I just had my hands up to my face. I just couldn't look. But the people that were around me, the family and friends, is when I heard them screaming, then I knew the ball went in. And it's just amazing. It's just, I'm still on cloud nine as we speak.
And listen, it must have been really tough, Stephen, not to be able to be there with him.
Oh, it is very tough, Claire. It's just like, I wanted to be there last night, you know, to give my son a hug and a kiss, but like, we just can't do it, you know. And then hopefully, you know, this clears up soon for all of us and to get to see me. Like, my son is all gone up to Christmas and he's seven more tournaments after this, and hopefully we get to see him soon.
Alan, we're tight on time, but it is important to kind of nearly appreciate a disappointment there. He didn't make it in his chosen sport, but he finds something else. Sometimes, you know, we can kind of cover things for kids and try to make everything right. It was brilliant to just see him get back at it.
Yeah, plus sometimes when knockbacks like that build your resilience, Dunica, as well, and as you said, the character that it built from. So for him to go down and play snooker, and obviously you listen to his dad speaking, so he has good guidance around him as well. But I know I played snooker for a long time as well, Donica. I love snooker. I've been over to the Crucible many times. I know how intimidating it can be in that arena for players, just even me just watching it. So for him to go out, all the cameras on him last night and to perform against Ronnie O'Sullivan, it's phenomenal, especially if he's only picked the game up since 14. That makes it all the more incredible, to be fair. And you'll be hearing plenty about this boy going further in the future. And as his dad said, he has seven more tournaments now, so hopefully he can kick on from here. But he has an unbelievable chance now, because the standard of snooker, when the likes of a couple of the top boys go out, anybody can beat anyone, and he's in the mix now that he could possibly go on and win this tournament, which would be just incredible.
Alan, I don't know where you find the time for all this watching of sport, because you seem to be full time at it.
Snooker was my number one, Marie.
Your missus my number is going to kill you.
Yeah. And then the football. Imagine that. My dad down the town hall, man, he's Dawson School and all sorts of things, yeah.
Well, I think you're onto something. If Aaron Hill brings his snooker cue down to Parky Cueve, I'd say he'd definitely get a game. Alan Cawley, thanks so much for joining us. Stay with us, because after the break, we're chatting to Chris McNulty about how Level 3 restrictions are affecting sport in Donegal.
Game on 2FM.
Now, Donegal are set to enter 3 weeks of level 3 COVID restrictions. But what does that mean for sport? Journalist Chris McNulty joins us now from Donegal. Chris, what is the status for sport now in Donegal? Because Donegal is such a sports mad county.
Well, I suppose the first thing, Marie, there's uncertainty across a lot of sports in terms of how we're going forward. I mean, the first things first, the big news this week was the GAA. Even before we good news yesterday that we were entering level 3 for 3 weeks, the Senior Football Championship final was postponed due to a positive case in one of the competing clubs. So we were sort of in a bit of a not a mess, but you know, we're sort of entering that uncertain week from Monday when that emerged. Arising then from last night, you know, we have three games in an adult championship football this weekend, one senior relegation playoff, we've got the intermediate final and the junior championship semi-final, all of which will now be played behind closed doors. So basically what is called elite sport can go ahead. Now there's I suppose a bit of frustration in certain sports because we've a scenario tomorrow where the intermediate championship final goes ahead in the GAA, but we've got an Ulster Shield final in soccer which has been called off. So the FAI have directed that all adult amateur football and all schoolboys and school girls football doesn't go ahead, but elite football, and that's anything relating or pertaining to League of Ireland at senior and underage level, can go ahead. So I suppose, Marie, the situation this evening and since last night is a bit of frustration that there maybe isn't a uniform approach from all sports. You know, last night everyone's sitting looking at their own governing body and waiting for direction and waiting for advice as to how they can go forward for the next 3 weeks.
Let's just look at the GAA for a second, because obviously you have been following what's been happening in your own county, and it has evolved over a few days where it ended up with the postponement of the county final. So then a few weeks back, John Horan said that counties might have to step aside if there are positive tests in inter-county setups. And then today, Fergal McGill indicated that if a member tests positive for COVID-19, that counties will probably not have to forfeit games. So I think that probably backs up what you're saying, that there isn't a lot of clarity around it. So look, just on not having to forfeit games and trying to postpone games and fit everything in, do you think it's feasible that, given the current situation, your own experience in Donegal, that the championship is going to run smoothly?
I don't think it's going to run smoothly, Marie. I don't think sort of anything across any sport is going to run smoothly. I think what we, by saying we, I mean sports people, sports organisers, have to find a way to get it to run as smoothly as possible. And I think in fairness to the CCC here in Donegal, they've done that. You know, I mean, the easy thing to do would have been probably what was going to happen on Monday, and was insist that the game go ahead without, you know, one of the participants. But I think it was very, very interesting, actually, that one of the reasons on Tuesday that the CCC put out for calling the game off was that it was known that there was a positive case in one of the clubs, and by playing the game, the identity of that person would then be revealed. So they sort of thought that it was in that person or that player's interest that the game be called off, because obviously if he's not sort of there in the match day panel or not with the team or with the squad, it sort of becomes obvious that he's the positive case, which is a bit sort of, you know, a couple of weeks ago, like, you know, we've had a number of clubs who have suspect cases and the whole entire club activity ceases, but yet, you know, we had a positive case on Monday and there was a period of 24 hours where there was possibly going to be a match taking place.
It is so complex and as I said a little bit earlier, evolving all the time as well. And today the fixtures for all of the games in the championship were announced, and Donegal Tyrone isn't that far away. Just with everything that's going on, you know, do you envision that going ahead?
Well, I suppose looking at the dates, the 3 week level 3 restrictions lift on the, or they're intended, they last until the 16th of October, and I suppose they'll be reviewed before that. Donegal v Tyrone is down for October 17th, so that comes just a day later. You know, I suspect at this stage, Marie, it may be behind closed doors, or certainly with very, very severely restricted attendances, as has become the norm. But I do think the game itself will go ahead, and you know, I suppose the question remains, will spectators, or how many of them, will actually get in to see the game?
Chris, we always think about elite sport, but what about juveniles, minis, kids sports? What's going on in Donegal with younger level sport?
Yeah, well, I suppose all school boys soccer, Donegal, and all school boys and school girls, indeed, in both sports has been called off. And I suppose the elite anomaly, Donegal, was something I saw actually with my own eyes on Wednesday night. I popped over to the boxing club over in Raphoe, and Leah Gallen, who is a two-time European medalist, was training away with her coach, Gary McCullough, and she's hoping, I suppose, you know, none of us know what's going to happen November, December, but she's hoping to have a European Championships later this year. She was planning to have a national championship starting next week. They've been called off. You know, she doesn't know what's going to happen. Last night we entered level 3 boxing clubs. They don't sort of have that cater for elite. So she's basically now having to work on her own for the next 3 weeks and, you know, possibly maybe get someone within her own local area or do a bit of outside work. And again, you know, you look at other sports like the GA and like soccer, which has certain people permitted to do things. And yet, you know, you have someone like her who I would suggest should be qualified in the elite bracket is having to sort of, you know, be a bit inventive and, you know, sort of have to suffer her training at a very, very key time. And I think, you know, all of this is really, you know, it's sucking the motivation and sucking the soul really out of a lot of sports people, Donegal. You know, I mean, you know, you've been in that arena yourself and you know what it's like when you've got a target. But for a lot of these people now, they just don't have a target or a date that they're sort of training, hoping to get a date and hoping to get something to aim toward.
You know, it's nearly like it kind of forms part of decision-making process that time at 6 o'clock in the evening when we get the cases and we get the announcements and it's then, right, what are we going to be doing for the next few months? Chris McNulty, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate that. And we know it's tough times for everyone around the country, but especially as Donegal head into the level 3 restrictions, it is going to be a challenging time. But thanks so much for making the time to take our call.
Thanks, Marie.